everyone, and welcome to the Transform Your Confidence Show. This is a show about holistic leadership and advocacy, and I'm your host, Raj Gurn. Here's a bit about me. I'm a longtime serial entrepreneur who specializes in mindset, branding, media, communications, and marketing, and I firmly believe that great leadership and advocacy is predicated on the mission that everyone must benefit across the entire food chain. I'm an award-winning C-suite entrepreneur who has worked in the media and event space for the past 20 years with many Fortune 500, celebrity, and thought leader clients from around the world. At this point in my life, I seek to share my many insights and resources with anyone who wants to learn about holistic leadership and advocacy in a newly launched online community at the openchestconfidenceacademy.com, where I've mandated my entire organization to provide products and services that center around knowledge, action, and accountability. My goal with this show is to pull back the curtain, I mean way back, to bring you insider knowledge and resources on how today's changemakers are leading with intention and creating meaningful environments that serve everyone. I also want to help you reimagine what your life could be if you had a constant view from the top of the mountain. I believe that in order to get there and stay there, you need to learn from those who have a constant and unobstructed view of nirvana. These are not just the usual suspects, but the ones that sit in the middle of the volcano as the lava explodes to the top of the mountain. They are the crazy ones who change the world, and they are the ones that I want you to meet. Are you ready? Let's go. Thanks for tuning in to another great two-part series of the Transform Your Confidence Show. I'm your host as usual, Raj Gurn, the founder of the OpenChestConfidenceAcademy.com. This week's theme is mindset and clarity, and I'll be tackling the world of wellness today from an angle that I haven't yet explored, and that's occupational therapy. My goal is to provide you with a high-level understanding of what occupational therapy is and to provide you with some actionable tips on how to benefit from this, as well as some other tools in a series entitled How to Create Wellness Through Using the Right Tools to Change Your Narrative. To help me do this, my guest today is a longtime friend and colleague, Dimple Mukherjee, who is an occupational therapist, life coach, and published author. Welcome to the show, sweetheart. I'm so excited to be doing this with you.
And I am so excited to be doing this with you over my favorite topic, which is wellness.
Absolutely. So I want to kind of start our conversation, Dimple, just to kind of contextualize a little bit about what occupational therapy is, because, you know, we've all heard of it, but we don't really know what it is, when to kind of implement it, and what the benefits are. So let's start there and then kind of roll into the wellness component of our conversation. Are you comfortable with that?
Very. It's a very good question. You're not alone. Occupational therapy historically has been a little bit misleading, because when people think of the title occupational, they think of work. And in fact, what occupational therapy does, it defines occupation as anything that you need to do in any given day. So that could be your work, it could be self-care, it could be parenting, it could be leisure activities. So it could be any of that. But in a nutshell, occupational therapy is really aimed at helping someone rehabilitate back to where they were prior to an injury or an illness or an impairment that they've had. So in a nutshell, it falls under a rehab professional category, and it's really to help the individual get back to where they were before they became sick.
So what circumstances would lead to someone needing to solicit your assistance in this? Like, when do they know that it's you they need to come to?
At any point in their wellness or health journey, they start to realize that they're not functioning. So function is the key word. That they're not functioning at the level they were, that's when you would actually retain an occupational therapist. And because we work with a wide range of individuals, from infants to the elderly population and the whole gamut in between, there are many specific situations and circumstances when you would retain an occupational therapist. But on the whole, When you find that you can't do what you need to do in your daily life, that's when you would retain an OT.
So let's run a little bit through what that treatment could potentially look like. Obviously, we can't, go into the minutia details because it's case by case. But if we were to kind of benchmark some of that, can you take me through the general steps a person would take, be taken through if they were to come visit you? For anyone that is listening, watching and reading this and, they're not quite clear on, what would they need to do when they come to you? Because, when we hear these words like occupational therapist or any of these kind of titles, that we're not really brought up to understand what they mean, right? It can be a little daunting, and perhaps also it can be a feeling of, is there something wrong with me? So that's kind of the mindset, bit of that, why am I having to go down this road? So let's put people out of, curiosity about this. What could be some of the benchmark things that you would do from beginning to end of treating someone in this particular case?
Sure. So what I'm going to start off by saying is that within the traditional medical model, OTs are actually a very, and I'm OT, I'm using the jargon for OT, for occupational therapists is OTs. But really, within the traditional model, OTs are probably one of the very few professions that treats an individual holistically. So that means that if you're mentally compromised, so whether that's cognitively or emotionally, or if you're physically compromised, or all three, we're the person for you. And what I'm going to do is give you an example of someone that we would typically work with. And normally I would give someone an example of an individual with a stroke, but I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do today is I'm going to give you an example of the COVID long haulers. That is a really good example in this day and age on how we would work with an individual who has gone through that journey and now is left with sort of lingering chronic symptoms. Mm-hmm. And it entails all of their spheres of health. So there are mental deficits as well as physical difficulties that arise because of this. And some of them include things like fatigue, generalized weakness, headaches, compromised just overall ability to do things in your daily life, as well as dizziness. So similar to concussion. So if you take someone like that, physically they're compromised, mentally they're compromised, not to mention the trauma of actually having COVID. So what we would do is we would go in. It's very client-centered practice. You would go in, you would do an assessment where you would sit down with a client and really prioritize what are the things that are important to them, what are the activities that are important to them in their life that they want to return to. So we set goals together that are very client-centered. And one example for most people that would be, I want to be able to shower myself and dress myself and not have my partner or my child helping me through that. And we start there and we look at how their endurances and what are the physical limitations as well as the mental limitations that would prevent them from doing that. And from there, you build up their endurance, you build up their mental stamina. And one of the common things with the COVID long haul is brain fog. That's the cognitive piece that we would have to work with as well. So usually what OTs do, there are two techniques. You can either retrain someone so that they are just building up their stamina and their endurance, or you can teach them compensatory strategies or techniques to compensate for what they've lost. So in a nutshell, that is really how we approach treatment. We generally work with individuals for a long period of time, depending on the nature of the impairment. So I hope that answers your question, but I thought it would be useful to use an example like that, because people can relate to that right now.
Absolutely. And there's nothing better than being able to visualize, a concept that, you don't really understand or you're not really familiar with by putting it into a practical sense. So thank you so much for sharing that, Dimple.
You're awesome.
I want to ask you this. What outcome should a person expect for working with an OT that you feel is kind of realistic? And I know that you're going to say it's a range. Give us some ideas so people can have some sort of an understanding on that.
So as I mentioned earlier, we consider ourselves experts on function. So the outcome is really determined by the goals that the clients have set. And of course, we help them set realistic goals, as well as redefining a new normal. Sometimes it's just not possible to return to where you were, depending on the nature of your illness. But really, the outcome measure is done through specialized standardized outcome measures that we do an assessment at the start of the treatment, as well as the end of the treatment. What individuals can expect is that at the very least, you are going to regain some of your function, whether that's through retraining or whether that's through implementing modified techniques and accommodations, so that you can go back to finding meaning and purpose through the activities that you do. And that's one of our philosophies in OTs, is that we find meaning and purpose through doing. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to help individuals to go back to doing, and perhaps that might mean finding a new activity that is better suited for them, so that they're still able to reestablish meaning and purpose in their life. So overall, that's sort of the goal, is to help them find that back and return to it.
You know, I have to, you know, admit that I wasn't really fully familiar with what occupational therapists do, but can I tell you how many people and circumstances that I feel that, you know, soliciting your assistance would be extremely beneficial? I can think of so many circumstances where that would be the case. Yes. I'm so happy that I brought you on for this show. I really, really am.
I'm so glad to hear that. And you're not alone, Raj. It's a very complicated and pretty highly regarded profession. And I just stumbled upon it in school. It wasn't something I was fully aware of what I was stepping into, but I did trust my intuition and I knew my personality was suited to it. So I'm very actually glad that I am an OT, because it bodes well, not just for, I know we're going to get to this, it bodes well, not just for the illness model, but also prevention of illness. And, mm-hmm. and how do we show up in that world of wellness? Because there's that spectrum of illness and wellness. So I love that the profession lends itself to both areas of health.
And knowing you as I do on a personal level, I can't think of a more suited profession for someone who is so, you know, academically forward as you are. You're a very different type of out-of-the-box thinker. Mm-hmm. And wellness is the center core of your essence and your being. And you're an empathic human being. I can't imagine anyone better than you that's suited for this kind of a job description. And it sounds like it requires so much from you on a personal, spiritual, emotional, psychological and academic level. And I want to kind of mm-hmm. dive into a little bit of that next. But before I do, I kind of want to ask you one final question around some of this kind of benchmark stuff and foundational stuff around occupational therapy. Are there any contraindications that people should know about if a person had the symptoms that would lead to them needing an occupational therapist, but another underlying circumstance that would make it prohibitive to work with an OT?
You know, actually there isn't. So typically in Ontario, you need a physician's referral to see an OT if you want to have the service funded through OHIP.
Okay.
You actually don't need to go through the doctor if you were to retain a private OT. And the reason I say there's no contraindications to working with an occupational therapist is because a well-trained occupational therapist knows what's their scope of practice versus mm-hmm. what's not. So if you're clear on your scope of practice, then you actually are well aware of when it would be prohibitory to work with an individual. But often OTs work in acute care settings as well. So there's really no contraindications other than if the individuals experience any acute distress. And that would be just the same for anyone in the healthcare professionals. You would have to defer to the medical experts to take care of them. So I'd say the only time it would be contraindicated was if they were still going through very active medical issues, which means we really don't have a definitive understanding of what the underlying condition is. And if we're doing rehab with them, that may complicate or worsen their condition, then that would be, I think, made well aware to the OT. But other than that, once they're stabilized medically, there are no contraindications.
Absolutely. I think that answers all the questions that I had regarding this, Dimple. I want to kind of move into the wellness part of our conversation. I've done a number of shows on wellness, folks. You know this, and each different type of expert that I've spoken to regarding their take on it has had a slightly different viewpoint because of the specific perspective that they come into it from. With that said, Dimple, I want your take on that. What is wellness from your perspective, your lived experience, your professional experience?
Such a loaded question.
I know.
I'm going to try to be succinct. So, you know, I started my profession as an OT in allopathic medicine. And weaving in my own personal experiences with my professional experiences, I've come to the conclusion that physical health cannot exist without mental health, and mental health cannot exist without physical health. So I really value both of them equally. I think that just because you're physically well, it doesn't necessarily translate to being mentally well. So for me, wellness is a marriage of the two equally, as well as a life that is not just absent of illness, but a life where you're thriving and not just surviving. And that really came from my training in positive psychology, which was really around how do you live a good life? Mm-hmm. And to me, it's about creative expression. It's about creating a real good balance between your mind, body, and soul. So it's a lot of those things, but really it's a marriage of the two equally. And I think oftentimes in the society that we live in, we tend to place a lot of emphasis on physical health. And that's changing. There's still a lot of work to be done around that. But for me, it's to really have it both equally valued and taking the time and the space to invest in both areas of your life. So for me, that's like thriving, being happy most of the time, and yeah, living a good life that way. That's wellness for me.
Absolutely. So you are definitely a huge advocate for wellness living and practice a multidimensional way of cultivating optimal well-being. I mean, you were talking about well-being. I remember us over a coffee date a number of years ago where I was like, okay, yeah. You know, like I wasn't even tapped into my wellness. And you were kind of really one of the key people that opened me up to the idea that there is a way to recreate and reimagine your existence from a narrative and a perspective that you create for yourself rather than one that's been kind of subjected on you. And I do want to kind of tap into that shortly. But before I do, just for everyone that is, you know, watching this, listening to this, reading it, I want to share a little bit about your journey, Dimple. I feel that some of this has to do with your lived experience, as I mentioned a little earlier, and some of it to do with your professional experience. But can we contextualize why well-being for you is an important part of your life?
It has been the foundation of any adversity that I've gone through. And had I not had my health, I think I would have been in a way different place than I am today, which is, you know, having grown from the experiences and really applying those learnings into my life right now. So I don't think I ever take for granted that health is one of my top values. You know, we do work around value and purpose and what are those top values and can you name your top five values? And health is definitely one of them. Yes. I think through my journey, especially in my sort of early 20s to early 40s, so two decades, having a failed marriage. And I say that with, I say failed with a little bit of kindness and empathy because I don't actually see it necessarily as failed. I see it as growth. And I see that my ex and I are co-parenting well, and we have a different relationship that is healthier than the relationship we had. Mm-hmm. So through it all, through the rocky moments of my young adulthood as a woman who self-doubted herself probably too much, as well as going through the rocky marriages and the rocky relationships thereafter as well, the romantic relationships, and really being in a place of uncertainty. I think had I not prioritized my physical health, it wasn't always my mental health at the time, I wouldn't have been able to stay afloat. So for me, that has really carried me through. And so I know the power that good health has, especially during times of crisis and adversity, that can really get you through. And I always say this because I used to teach individuals on how to create rituals, especially morning rituals, which is my jam.
And that's a course. I remember you did a course a couple of years ago on this, right?
Yes. And I know everyone's not a morning ritual. Like, I'm a morning person. So you can certainly change the timings and do it when the sweet time is for you to do these things. But I was disciplined enough to stay with them through these times. And I think it's the practices and the rituals that you create during times when things are going well, you know, when things are going well and you maintain them, are when these rituals and practices really become your best friend during times of adversity. And that has been a consistent truth in my life.
You know, guys, if you're just joining us, I am in conversation with the fabulous Dimple Mukherjee. She is a occupational therapist. She's a published author and she is a wellness coach. And we're really kind of, you know, tapping into this this whole idea of wellness. And, you know, I'm very kind of intrigued by what Dimple just shared with us now, where she was saying that, you know, wellness for her is a very holistic experience. And we hear this, right, guys? We hear people talking about, you know, holistic experiences, holistic expression, holistic practices. But, you know, what they really are is something that we have to really kind of try and test different, you know, methodologies and theories and practices and, you know, knowledge and resources that are out there. And there are a lot available to figure out what is the best curated, you know, format of all of those that makes sense to us. And similar to what Dimple just said here is that she has this morning practice, and I'm also a morning person, so I can truly appreciate how what you do with the first hour or two of your, you know, waking day, whatever that may be for you, is the most crucial to set the intention of the kind of day and experience that you want to have, irrespective of all those things that come about that you don't know or you cannot control. Can I get your thoughts on that, Dimple?
So you actually really touched upon the theme that underlies wellness, and it's that we have more control than we think we do. And that directly relates to empowerment. So really my main focus in wellness is to help individuals realize that you are more in control of your health than you think you are. But in order to really learn about yourself and about your body and your body's intelligence, to really kind of be able to communicate with it, so using our mind and body connection, it takes discipline and practice, but it is so gratifying and it is so satisfying to really be in tune with who you are so that you can make the decisions that will serve your wellness the best. Because, you know, we've heard stories about how a mother's intuition supersedes any science out there. And there is so much truth to that. And that doesn't just apply to mothers, that applies to you and your body. And that has been the basis of what I would love for people to take away from our time together, if they don't take anything else away, is that you are in control of more than you think you're in control of.
Amen to that. Oh my God, it begs so many other questions. So I know I'm going to bring you back on just to have that discussion. I want to tap into something that I feel that you, you know, have, you know, really hit upon that I want to kind of explore a little bit. And this is this kind of whole idea of the fact that we do control our narrative and that, you know, we do have all the tools available to us. It's just kind of, and it doesn't matter what stage you're at in your evolution as a person. there is a starting point for everyone. So I'm a firm believer that creating wellness is a holistic exercise, similar to you, Dimple, that requires a lifelong commitment to moving the dial on aligning the mind, body, heart, soul, and energy field that in ancient India, you know this, Dimple, yogis created and have since practiced to optimize well-being, something that people are looking at tapping into more today than, you know, maybe when you and I were younger, definitely, you know, more than the last couple of hundred years when, you know, the Industrial Revolution kind of changed the landscape of how we're allowed to function and live. And that's a bit of an aside, but I really believe that the Industrial Revolution put us into these microscopic boxes where we had to fit into the jigsaw puzzle of something bigger. And we weren't allowed to explore beyond that. And that, I feel, has caused a lot of generational trauma. And I feel that this kind of whole idea of us tapping into our divine feminine, tapping into the age of the Aquarius, depending on whether you believe in this stuff or not, I do. I've done a lot of research on this. And I truly believe that when you go back thousands of years, life and history is cyclical, and we keep going through the same things until we learn what we're meant to learn, which is like the wheel of karma, the wheel of dharma, right? A Dimple, I know that you understand what I'm talking about. I want your thoughts on this whole idea of, you know, the yogic practice of wellness, which I know you believe in because you are holistic just as I am, and we're on that journey. What are your thoughts on how we could maybe simplify how we can tap into these elements associated with your idea of well-being?
So I have a very simple answer.
Okay.
That because
thank God, because that was a complicated way of me asking you a question.
I completely understand everything you're saying to me. And, you know, as you were talking, of course, there was this big piece around patriarchy and around women in medicine and how modern medicine is not really listening to women. And this is a whole different topic on its own that we can have another conversation on. But in terms of inclusion, in the interest of inclusion and really talking to everyone here, I've learned over the years that wellness can be very difficult for some people, even though it might seem really simple to me. And I've learned over the years that it's not always the tools that people aren't aware of. It's really about how do you start, like you said, this massive journey towards wellness, depending on where you are on that spectrum. My biggest learnings and takeaways, and when I share this with people, it resonates, is just to create space. It is as simple as creating a space for yourself, whether that's once a week that you want to start with, or once a day, or whatever it is that suits your lifestyle right now. And it's a very tiny bite-sized piece. But to cultivate stillness, and it doesn't have to be filled with anything in the beginning. It doesn't have to be filled with meditation. It doesn't have to be filled with journaling. It does not have to be filled with reading or listening to audiobooks. Like, none of that has to happen. But what does have to happen is removing yourself from technology, removing yourself from distractions, and really being conscious about what comes up when you're in stillness, and whether that's 15 minutes of stillness or an hour away alone. I think we are part of a culture where we want to numb pain. Mm-hmm. So it's a very sort of band-aid shortcut. What can I do to take this away from myself? And pain is information. It is not easy. It is not fun. But if you don't allow it to inform you, it will linger, and it's going to be there for a very long time, which is not what we want either. So all I say is just to find time. If you need to schedule it into your calendar or your analog, like I do, just start there.
You know, you said something there that just really, really, you know, is sitting with me right now. And after, you know, we're done with our conversation today, Dimple, I'm going to go away and think about this. And I know I'm going to meditate upon it because I know I'll get the visions I need to get. You said something so powerful that if, in case anyone missed it, I want to kind of re-say this. Pain is information, guys. This is such a profound yet simple idea behind how to tackle the pain that you experience on the different levels that you can possibly experience it. Thank you for sharing that, Dimple. That is so powerful and profound that, oh my God, like you need to write a book on that pain. Right? Write it down, girlfriend. I'm telling you, it's coming to me.
I know. It took me many years, Raj. It's like I was the master pain number and it did not help.
Thank you so much for staying till the end. I really hope you enjoyed the show. Before you leave, I would love for your support by subscribing to my show and letting everyone you know about it and have them come take a listen. I would sincerely appreciate you joining me at LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Search Raj Gurn and the Open Chest Confidence Academy. Until next week, I hope you continue to cultivate your own ecosystem so that everyone in and around it is empowered by your mission to elevate them all. See you next week.